With two safe injecting rooms, legal access to medical marijuana, and a debate about pill testing at music festivals, Australia appears to be having a new kind of conversation about drugs. And a new book predicts that the growing evidence of medical benefits from drugs like LSD and magic mushrooms will add to a gradual shift away from a law and order approach to drugs. Despite governments fighting the so-called war on drugs for decades, the global drug trade has only grown, while the militarised attempt to contain it costs billions and kills, maims and imprisons millions of people globally. Author and journalist Anthony Lowenstein travelled the world for his new book, which is called Pills, Powder and Smoke, Inside the Bloody War on Drugs. He came into the PM studio earlier.
Look, the reason I wrote the book really was simple. I thought that many people in the West, when they think of the drug war, might think of Mexico, or they might think, well, states in the US are legalizing marijuana, and therefore the drug war is winding down, or it's happening over there, wherever there might be. And the truth is that, as I report in countless countries around the world, the drug war, in fact, has never been worse. It's affecting more and more civilians. Why? Because demand for drugs, cocaine, heroin, whatever it may be, has never been higher. Australia's got one, for example, with one of the highest per capita drug use in the world. US, which of course is the biggest market in the world, is massively interested in drugs from cocaine and other illicit substances. So on the ground, what that means in places like West Africa and Honduras and the Philippines and elsewhere, it means that people often are paying a horrible personal toll for either producing the drugs, farming those drugs, or using those drugs. And the book, I suppose, tries to articulate why a prohibitionist mindset, which has existed for 50 plus years in much of the world, often pushed out by Washington, but not just the US, is so destructive and doesn't actually achieve what it claims to be achieving, but it is a war on the poor.
And why does that war on drugs mindset persist? Because it's not always been the case. I mean, humans have always taken drugs of some sort. It's not always been the case that we've been intolerant towards drugs, and indeed many drugs are in fact legal.
They are, and I think it's partly a moral issue. I think a lot of people who pushed the drug war did it for either because they believed that it was religiously necessary to do so. It made you a bad person if you smoked a joint or if you used heroin. And also a racial element. In much of the world I look at, particularly the US, UK and Australia, there was a racial element that we were worried back in the day, we being the majority white population, that if white women would be abused by men who took drugs, who smoked pot, who used heroin, they would be, their virginity would be deflowered. And this sort of sounds a bit silly now in 2019, but that argument was very strong. And although we don't use that language in 2019, I think the argument about why drugs are still seen as a moral failing if you take them is still there, where I think it should be seen so much as, in my view, as a personal choice. Drugs can be destructive. Drugs can be awful. Drugs can kill you. That's undeniable. But I think the fact that so many people take it, the vast majority of people who take drugs do it without any harm to themselves, personally. Now, whether someone should be, you know, smoking 20 joints a day is a different question, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's an evil thing to do. And I think there's still very much also a huge defense industry that benefits from this. So much of the US foreign policy establishment pushes a drug war because they can sell weapons to countries that are fighting it, Honduras, Colombia, etc., Mexico. And while demand for the drug remains massively high, it's arguably an incredibly futile war unless you believe, for example, that a private prison industry in, say, the US will benefit from a drug war, which it does, because incarceration rates remain very high. It's not a conspiracy to say that. It's simply how this reality works and has, whether it's Democrat or Republican in the White House.
The criminal cartels, though, behind drugs are very real. They're also incredibly violent. I mean, doesn't that require a policing defence-style response?
It does. And an argument I make in the book is that if there is a legal and regulated drug regime, which I believe there should be, that money that will be saved from going after some poor kid who's smoking a joint or taking an ecstasy pill at a music festival will be spent on going after cartels. There would still be, probably, a black market of sorts, people trying to make money from misery through the production of
bootleg alcohol, for example,
for
in countries where it's legal.
Indeed. And in fact, for example, in the US now, where a number of states have legalized marijuana for recreational and medicinal purposes, a black market, in fact, is still thriving. And I'm not suggesting those people should be arrested and thrown in jail. I'm saying that even in a legal system, there still will be that. So an example would be the El Chapo case, you know, one of the most infamous drug lords in the world, now in jail in the US, will probably die there. He's a relatively young man still, recently found guilty guilty of horrible crimes. He's obviously a terrible human being. However, is there an argument in any logical way that by imprisoning him, the industry in Mexico has gone down, the drug industry has never been stronger, in fact, and arguably that the US policy of a kingpin assassination policy, so often they go around the world saying if we take out the top guy, this industry somehow will reduce, when in fact the opposite is true, that now in Mexico you kind of have a splintering of the drug industry now. And what's interesting is as many US states are legalizing pot, as Mexico itself, in fact, is now talking about legalizing marijuana, which I think will probably happen in the next 5 or so years, a lot of these drug cartels are moving into other areas, kidnapping, amongst a range of other industries. So it doesn't simply mean that he legalized drugs, therefore criminality ends. Of course not. But the majority of money that they're making is because drugs are illegal. The criminal element of drug cartels is because drugs are illegal and the demand for drugs is so high. That's why you remove that and you remove a huge chance that they can make profit.
There are obviously still people who argue against that, and your book is a pretty good assemblage of evidence for your argument. Just on that question of attitudes shifting, you know, marijuana, attitudes softening towards marijuana, as you say, decriminalisation in various places, medical marijuana has been a key to that, it seems to me. Why do you think attitudes are shifting more generally? Because we've also, for example, got the argument about pill testing here in Australia, highly contested, but it's a discussion.
It is. I think it's changing because drugs have become so ubiquitous. A lot of people see friends taking drugs, family taking drugs, themselves taking drugs. That could be a joint after a night. It might be an ecstasy pill. It might just be having whatever other substance they enjoy. So it's partly that. It's become a lot more common. Secondly, I think that the moral aspect, as Christianity's influence decreases, I think, in much of the West, I think that moral element, that sort of view from the church, which often was very much against drugs, is decreasing. Partly that. I think it's also a fact a lot of people see the use of drugs as not a problem, that the vast majority of people who are taking drugs, using illicit substances, are not getting in trouble, are not dying, are not getting addicted. It is a small minority who do, and obviously the state, in my view, needs to take care of those people much better than they do. And it's interesting with the issue also of the growing use of psychedelic drugs, ecstasy, LSD, magic mushrooms. Studies are showing, particularly in the US and the UK, how those drugs, not just for enjoyment purposes, can help people with depression, PTSD. So it's conceivable that in, say, 5 or 10 years, you would go, say, to a doctor, and rather than today them giving you maybe a pill for deal with your depression or PTSD, which may work but may not, you would get a session with a registered, experienced therapist with ecstasy. And the research shows unbelievable benefits from the use of these drugs in controlled environments to help people with serious mental problems. So it doesn't mean everyone should start taking LSD, of course not. But it does mean that people, for example, have addiction issues with cigarettes, with other substance abuse, alcohol. There is vast evidence now that shows that. And still a lot more work to be done on that. It's not 100% proven point.
But there's a direction there.
There is. So I do think that there is obviously pushback. The Trump administration, for example, has talked openly about ramping up the drug war. They're certainly increasing a militarization of that in, say, Colombia, which remains, despite a 2016 peace deal, which is now sadly collapsing, it's still the world's biggest producer of cocaine, and that's only going to get higher because demand is growing. So there is certainly still a push by elements in the establishment to maintain a hard line on drugs. That's going to be there. But public opinion is shifting, and I think it generally does start with marijuana. And I do think here in Australia, it feels far away now, and it's unlikely maybe to happen with a Conservative Prime Minister in, say, Scott Morrison. But I do think that legalising marijuana is inevitable here. It might take 5 years. It might take 10 years. More likely with the Prime Minister who supports it, as Morrison does not. And I do think that pill testing in New South Wales and elsewhere is also inevitable. The evidence is overwhelming that it helps people and reduces harm to those who take ecstasy and other drugs. We need leadership and politicians who are not scared, as often they are, I think, of a tabloid backlash.
But can you understand a parent perhaps listening to you right now thinking, you know what, I've got so
this guy's
many
crazy.
Headaches with my teen. This guy's crazy. I've got so many headaches with my teenager.
Yeah.
You know, the social world is threatening enough. There's alcohol. There's already drugs out there. Why would I want to invite more?
I can. I'm a parent myself. My child is very young, not taking drugs yet as far as I know. But my argument to that is very simple, that the harm that is caused by prohibition is far worse. No one such as myself who argues to legalise or regulate all drugs says that therefore all drug taking will be 100% safe. It can never be. But what a legalised and regulated system does is it means, A, you know what would be in the drug. So a lot of the problems that are being caused, for example, by a lot of the young people who are dying from ecstasy pills here is because no one knows what's in them. Often there's toxic chemicals. That's a problem. A legalised, regulated market would have only drugs that are produced either in a state lab or a private company that's regulated, one. Two, no one's suggesting if you legalise drugs, you know, you should buy heroin at a pharmacy, you know, just over the counter. No one's arguing that. There is a, as I say in the book and a lot of other people have shown, there needs to be a system of highly regulated use and sale. So you wouldn't just be able to buy the strongest drugs across the counter. And thirdly, I'd say that if you think about what's causing most of the drug problems in society, putting aside, I might add, the fact that alcohol causes more problems than anything else, and that's a very legal drug, and I think Australia deals with those problems very badly. I don't think we provide enough support to those people who do actually abuse alcohol, but putting that aside, I think that if you have a legalized, regulated system, parents who have young teenagers or young family members would feel, I like to think, more comforted by the fact there's much more state support for those kind of individuals if they get into trouble. Secondly, education would start young. The idea now that in 2019, schools across, whether they're public or private, do not have from a young age drug education, not just saying drugs are evil, not the Nancy Reagan just say no mentality. I'm not saying start it in kindergarten, maybe, but start it young, that drugs are a way of life. It doesn't mean you encourage drugs. In fact, mature drug education would say drugs can cause problems. I'm not idealizing drug use, far from it. I'm saying that a prohibitionist mindset has got us into a situation where people are literally getting into massive trouble because they don't know what they're taking. And also, as you said at the beginning, a lot of people have always taken drugs for a range of reasons. Let's look at, more importantly, why people are taking drugs. If you legalize drugs, doesn't mean therefore more people will take it. For example, in Portugal, very briefly, in 2001, they decriminalized all drug use. Now, people who are against this might say, well, drug use must have gone up. No, the opposite, in fact, has happened. Still, people abuse drugs there. Of course, it's not an utopian situation, but drug use, in fact, has gone down. Drug abuse has gone down in Portugal, the only country in the world that's done so. And that, to me, is a pretty good model. And the prohibitionist mindset we have in Australia, I think people would be a lot more comforted if they knew what was in the drugs that their kids will inevitably take.
Anthony Lowenstein, thank you very much for speaking with PM.
Thank you.
Anthony Lowenstein, whose book is Pills, Powder and Smoke, and he's in Australia for various talks.